and everything in between, this is Real Talk by Real Women. We share with you the highs and lows of their journey and give you honest insight on how you can navigate same with confidence, integrity, and gain a little inspiration. As a leadership strategist, executive coach, and business consultant, I have the pleasure of working with organizations and individuals, helping them to turn their goals into success. Hey everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Phenomenal Woman. When I embarked on the project of producing this podcast, my goal was to share the success stories of particularly women of colour, other women, so we don't have to reinvent the wheel or think we're on our own with some of the challenges we face. What I didn't, look at or expect, that's what I'm looking for. What I didn't expect to happen was the great women I would get to meet, and they have some truly, truly inspiring stories and have faced great adversities to get where they are. And this week's interview is no exception. I make no apologies for the length of this week's episode. It's a little longer than usual, and it probably could have gone on for a few more hours because I had such a great conversation with Mary Martha that it was phenomenal. So please take time to listen to the end of it. She's very, very inspiring in some of the challenges she's faced. She her struggles with depression and anxiety, the fact she had brain surgery, how she reused creative therapy and art to become an award-winning game designer. She was a carer from a very young age of her mother. But I don't want to give it all away. I want you to listen and take in some of the great advice she actually gives in this week's episode. And not only that, I want to say thank you for sticking with me and this project. As I said, I get phenomenal feedback, no pun intended, from all you listeners. I want you to keep on sharing, keep on giving me ideas for particular interviewees. Let me know what areas that I could cover a little bit more in depth. Let me know if you want to know more about the interviewees or interviewees, or if there's more in-depth questions I could be asking. But please continue to submit your suggestions, to rate, to subscribe, to share, and to comment. So I will stop wittering on, and without further ado, I'll introduce you to this week's interviewee. This week, I'm in conversation with Mary Martha Ford Jang. Losing her father at an early age and shouldering the responsibility of caring for a disabled parent, Mary Martha Ford Jang is no stranger to difficult times. She turned her pain into play by developing a card game, The Ultimate Clapback. She is a supporter of mental health awareness and speaks candidly about her diagnosis of depression and anxiety and the steps she has taken to ensure she continues to thrive. She is a two-time award-winning game developer, has survived brain surgery, and encouraged others to be brave, fearless, and active participants in their quest for greatness. Mary Martha loves cheese puffs, ginger ale, and ice cream. She is originally from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and now resides in New York City with her husband, Tony. So, Mary Martha, welcome to this week's edition of Phenomenal Woman. You're affectionately known as M&M.
Yes, I am.
So, before we really get into it, because you know from your bio, you've had a lot of adversity, and you look like the bounce back queen. So, yes. before we get into it, can you tell me or tell the listeners a little bit more about yourself and your humble beginnings, please?
Sure. So, I'm originally from Pittsburgh. I am the youngest of four, so three boys, and then myself. So we have a blended family. My mother was married before she met my dad and married him. So my mom was unfortunately in an abusive relationship, had my brother Billy. So she divorced. Yeah. And then she married my father, who had two sons, Fred and Lester. And their mother, so his wife, passed away. She had breast cancer.
Right.
So this was in the, 70s.
Okay.
In the 70s. And so then my mom and dad got married. And then no one was expecting me. There was a 13 age difference, a 13 year gap between my mom and dad. And my mother thought that she was going through the change. My father was like, we're not having kids. And then lo and behold, this little chocolate drop popped up. My mother denied being pregnant for 9 months.
Wow.
But this girl came. And they wanted to name me Mabel. And when I say they, I should say my mother. My mother wanted to name me Mabel.
Right.
After my father's mother. My father was like, no. And I am so glad that my father put his foot down and did not allow my mother to name me Mabel. Could you imagine sitting with me today, Mabel? What? No offense to anyone whose name is Mabel. It's a wonderful name. It's just not who I am. So Mary Martha. So Mary was my great-grandmother. Martha, my grandmother. My middle name is Elizabeth, which was the middle name of my great-grandmother and my great-aunt Dorothy.
Right. So you have a really long name. So it's Mary Martha Elizabeth Ford Jang.
Because I got married.
Excellent. So I got that right. Excellent.
Yes. And so I lived in the ghettos of Pittsburgh. When I sit and I start to think about it, I don't think I realized exactly how poor.
Right. Yeah.
Until I became an adult. I didn't know. There, you know, luckily for us, there was always food on the table. Yeah. I mean, we ate a lot of potatoes, but I like potatoes. So I didn't realize that, you know, potatoes are cheap. And so that's why people ate them. Or we eat a lot of bread, but I like bread. But we were eating a lot of bread because it filled up the empty hollow spaces in our tummies.
Yes.
You know, eat a lot of rice. These are things, you know, that I like. So my oldest living brother today is 20 plus years older than I.
Okay.
So it was like 24 years, 22 years. And then my brother, Billy, who lives here in New York City, that's where I currently live. He and I are 10 years apart. So I kind of grew up as an only child in the house, really, if that makes any sense.
Yes. Yes.
The earliest memory that I have of the brother that's like closest to me when I was, he and I are 10 years apart. My closest memory is like when I was five, that's what I remember.
Right.
And then by that time he was, you know, in high school and heading off to college some years after. So, I was in the house, by myself. So somewhere around, let's see, I turned 9.
Okay.
And my father passed away. So I lost my father very young. That was 1989. Okay. Someone did the math real quick. That was April. So I think we're coming up on 28, 29 years or so ago that my father passed away. And I have to say that my life really changed when that happened. I wasn't a stranger to death.
Okay.
I understood what it meant. A month before my father died, my best friend died.
Okay.
She was 10.
Wow.
We're coming up on that anniversary in like 2 days, I think. She had the flu. There was like this flu epidemic that happened, and then there were chicken pox in her neighborhood, and she had five sisters, and one of the sisters came home with chicken pox because everyone was getting chicken pox, and then she had flu. And then she passed away. So I knew about death, but when my father died, it was something different. And that's what really shifted me, because I became an adult at the age of 9.
Okay.
My mother, when I think about it now, I did not know that my mother was really different from anyone else. My mother walked with a cane.
Right.
Doesn't everyone's mom walk with a cane? My mother had special shoes. So I didn't really know anything was different until then. I knew that something was different. And so my mother was born in the 40s with some type of condition that didn't have a name then and still does not have a name 72 years later. We still don't have a name for what it is.
Right.
As the story goes, my grandmother was ready to have my mom. So she was in labor and the doctor was not available. He was not ready. So they did something to stop the contractions.
Okay.
Then the doctor was ready. However, my mother and my grandmother were not ready. And as the story goes, the doctor went up in my grandmother's hoo-ha and pulled my mom out.
Wow.
And so it's believed that that's when whatever it is happened.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So it kind of mimics cerebral palsy in some instances. Okay. It's a little bit like MS. It's a little bit like muscular dystrophy.
Right.
It's a little bit like ALS. It's a little bit like this, a little bit like that. And so no one really knows. And so over the years, my mother's health has declined physically.
Right.
There's nothing ever wrong with her mind. But it's interesting, you know, back in the 40s, when you were born, quote unquote, different, they just assumed, you know, back then they called it retarded.
Yes. Yes.
We don't call that, you know, we don't call that, you know, it today, but that's what they did. And they put everyone that was different in what they called open air classes. So you just were thrown into a room and people were yelling out and needed help and all these other things. But my mother's mind was fine. She just fell a lot.
Right. Right.
You know, if the wind blew, my mom, you know, my mom would fall.
Okay.
So, when my father died, I started to do lots of things that my father did around the house.
Okay, yes.
This was not an expected event when my father passed away. He had a heart attack, and then, he thought he had indigestion, is what he thought. And my mom was like, no, I think maybe you should go to the hospital. So we called the paramedics, and my father walked out of the house and never came back. He was actually doing better and was supposed to come home. Well, no, or maybe put down into like a step down unit, and aneurysm on the aorta.
Wow.
Just out of nowhere. So no one was expecting that.
Okay.
So then I was thrust into doing some of the things that my father used to do. So because of my mother's disability, she was unable to write.
Okay.
I started writing checks at the age of 9.
Wow.
Janice, wow. My math was not that good. You know, I was bouncing checks and but I was not. What were they thinking? They were like, the girl can do it.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what happened. I grew up very quickly. There were lots of responsibilities. Then shortly after that, we ended up in a car accident. And so then what was already my mother having difficulty physically worse because of the car accident. And so, you know, I was cooking full meals.
I was about to say, so after you, I mean, as you said, there's a big gap between you and your siblings.
Yeah.
And obviously you stepped up into it. Because I understand that I'm an elder child of 6.
Okay.
I'm a first generation immigrant, so there were lots of things mom probably didn't understand because she was young when she had me, and I stepped, so I have some empathy for what you're going, obviously not to the level you did, but I suppose who was looking after you, because you were still growing, you were still a child.
Yeah. So with that being a blended family, what I'm learning now as an adult, because I think even as we grow as adults, when we think about situations that have happened in the past, you still see it through the lens of the child.
Right.
So through the lens of a child, I didn't understand why my older brothers were not around.
Okay.
They had a very interesting relationship with my father. I didn't know that. You know, I was daddy's old girl.
Right.
So I didn't understand adult things. So there was a strained relationship there. And what I come to find out now is because they felt that my father married too soon after their mother had died.
Right.
Rightfully so. Like, you know, I get it.
Yeah.
I get that now. And my older brothers were not there. The oldest used to call my mom when he was drunk.
Okay.
And yell at her.
Right.
Why didn't my father love me? Why didn't, like, you know, all of those things.
Okay.
So there was a lot of that. So they weren't going to be around. My brother Billy was he was in college.
Right.
Yeah, he was still in college in Pittsburgh.
They just started their life.
But I mean, he was doing what he thought that he needed to do to help to take care of us. So his thing was, I'm going to work really hard in college. I'm going to go and become this Broadway star, and then I'm going to be able to fix it.
Right.
So that was his journey.
Okay.
And that's really how it all happened. So my mother knew that this could not last long term.
Right.
And there were things that she wanted to do. Like, she wanted me to be a child. And so my mother figured out how to get the resources that she needed so that she could be as independent as possible. My mother always wanted to be independent.
Right.
And was independent.
Yes.
For as much as she could be. But there still were physical limitations that, you know, I had to take care of. There were things that just had to be taken care of. And that was a lot. That's a lot on me. Which is probably why most of the jobs that I chose had to deal with, like, taking care of people.
Right.
Because I had done it for so long and I was good.
Yes. Yeah. And so, I was going to ask you how is that upbringing? How did it impact, or how did it motivate your career choices?
Yeah. So I didn't want to go to school.
Right. Okay.
I did not want to go to college. Did you ever watch, like, The Cosby Show?
Yes.
There was an episode, I think, was it Theo who said that he just wanted to be a regular person and work at a gas station. Like, he didn't want to go to college.
Right.
I was like, I don't want to go to college. Like, I don't need that. I'm so glad that I went to college. Oh my God. my brother forced me to go.
Yes.
And I had some choices. He said you could, I could go to Carnegie Mellon University, Temple University. He said NYU, Carnegie Mellon University. He was just choosing, like, all of these top tier schools and, but what did I want to be?
Yes.
And I grew up around theater.
Okay.
I grew up around theater because my brother was in New York City.
Right, so that's Billy.
Billy. So because the age difference was so great,
yes,
I would come to New York City in the summertime and stay with my brother.
Right.
At that time, he was doing 8 shows a week. I couldn't be in the apartment by myself.
Yes.
Well, not in New York back then, because it was worse than what it is today.
Right.
Yes. Okay. So I grew up around the theater. So my brother Billy was in New York City on Broadway. So I would come to New York in the summertime and I would spend the summer with him. He was giving my mom a break from me, of course. And so that was his way of looking out for me. And so I had to sit backstage 8 shows a week. I was too young to be in the house, in the apartment by myself. And that's when I learned about theater management.
Okay.
And then that's ultimately what I went to school for.
Excellent.
So I'm a graduate of Temple University, and I went to Temple for theater, and my concentration was in stage management. And I worked professionally as a stage manager and then transferred into company management for theater for several years. I actually, when I showed up to Philadelphia, I said, I don't need classes. We can talk theory all day. I'm going to go and I'm going to do it. So there was a theater up the street. It was called Freedom Theater, which was, still is an African-American theater. Then it was the oldest LORT theater. So LORT is the League of Regional Theaters in the U.S. And that means that it's part of the union.
Right.
They hire union actors. So there's, like, different tiers of this. Right. Anyway, I went there. I said, I want to be a stage manager. So, teach me. And so I started sweeping floors at the age of 17 at this theater. Wow. And then by the time I finished college, I had joined the Actors Equity Union.
Okay.
And I had my card and then started stage managing professionally.
Okay. So never the desire to act yourself or be in theater, to be on the stage?
No. Who wants to do that? I wanted to make money. I wanted to make money. But no, and you know what? Honestly, it just wasn't my thing. I have an outgoing personality to some degree, but being in front of people like that, or I should say at least then, was very uncomfortable. And also because my
older brother was doing it, I'm not doing what he's doing.
Yes.
You know, it's okay to be near it, but I'm never going to be on stage. You know, you know, people ask me, do you sing? And I was like, I mean, I can, but I'm not doing that professionally because someone else in the family already does that. So why would I be doing that?
Yeah, it's going to be different. It'd be a little bit different.
Right. And so in choosing that and thinking about like careers, you know, the way that I grew up, no one had a career.
Right.
My father had a job.
Okay.
My father did security somewhere in Pittsburgh, and then he was also the neighborhood like handyman.
Right.
Locksmith, and we would go dumpster diving, you know, the night before. You know, the garbage collector would come and I would help him put televisions back together and stuff like that. Okay. So there was no like career.
Right.
We were like, my brother out of the grandchildren was the first one to go to college.
Okay.
And then graduate. And so he helped to show me that there was something more than just Pittsburgh.
Right. Yes.
And so, so I am very grateful for that experience, because many of the people that I grew up with and grew up around, they didn't have that experience. And so because of that, their life choices were very much different.
Right.
And so, you know, I didn't have a choice.
Okay.
I really didn't have any other choice. I went to school. So now you have to work. I couldn't go back home. I left when I was 17 to come to school. And that was it. There was no other choice for me. Right, I knew that when I left my mother's home, I did not have anywhere else to come back to. Right. I mean, at that time, we no longer had the family home. My mother, because physically she couldn't do stairs and different things like that, she had moved into like an apartment building, but it was for people that were older.
Right.
So I couldn't live there.
Couldn't be there. Yes.
I couldn't be there. And it was income based, and my mother didn't have an income. Like, so I could not live there.
Right.
And so because of that, you know, that motivated me to, you have to do this.
Yes.
You don't have any other choice. No one's taking care of you.
Right.
You have to take care of yourself.
Right.
And then it was, and not only do you have to take care of yourself, you're going to have to take care of your mother. And I knew that.
Right.
I knew that. Subconsciously, I think I knew it more before, like now where it's actually, you know, evident and I'm living through elder care.
Yeah.
But back then I knew I have to do it because mommy can't take care of me.
Right.
I'm going to need to do something for, you know, for her.
Right.
And I was very fortunate to really only have jobs in the entertainment industry. I didn't have to take jobs outside of the entertainment industry unless I wanted to.
Okay.
There was this one time that I thought that I would be a tutor. I was on a hiatus from a show. So I said, oh, I'll be a tutor at an inner city library. And this was in Philadelphia. But after one of the neighborhood kids came in and beat up the security guard, I opted not to do that anymore. So I opted not to do that anymore. And I said, no, I'm going to stick to theater. I'll stick to theater until I just didn't want to anymore. It was fun. And then it wasn't fun. And it began to feel like work.
Okay.
And that was not good for me.
Right.
I didn't want it to feel like work. I wanted to enjoy what it was that I was doing. I knew that I didn't want to be miserable in anything, you know, that I was doing. And I had a situation, I had a situation where I was working for a theater that just went, it was just bad. It was a bad situation. And so I had to figure out, you know, what to do because I wasn't going to continue to work there. Janice, I showed up for that job on February the 15th and started looking for a new job on February the 15th.
Yes, I know.
I was hoodwinked, bamboozled, led astray, run amok. I remember calling my mother saying, what did I do?
So what did you do in that situation? Because I'm sure as listeners, we've all done jobs where we think on paper it looks fantastic.
Yeah.
And then till we get in there, it's like, you know, it's just a wow. What happened? This doesn't look like anything that it said on the tin. What happened? How did you deal with that?
Well, after I cried nightly, I decided, you know, you have to get up and you have to change your situation. Right. No one else is going to change my situation. No one else is going to be looking for jobs for me. No one else is going to, you know, write my resume and, you know, and all of those things. So at that point, because that situation was so bad, I vowed that I was never going to do theater again. I was like, I'm done with theater. I don't know what I'm going to do. So it was about like, what are my transferable skills?
Right.
And, you know, my savings was gone. So I'm like, where am I going to live? And I said, I have to think quick. And so I found a job back home in Pittsburgh, which is really interesting because I said I would never return to Pittsburgh.
Right.
Never say never, yeah. Ladies.
Yeah.
Never say never.
Yeah.
Because the creator has a way of making you eat those words. But it worked out. I went back home to Pittsburgh and I started working in higher education. I became a resident director.
Okay. Okay.
Because a lot of the skill set were transferable. So as a company manager, I was in charge of taking care of travel, hospitality, yes. Housing.
Yes.
At many of the theaters where I worked, there were students. So I knew how to work with young people.
Okay.
And so I had an interview with them and I went and started working there.
Right.
I moved into higher education and I fell in love.
Excellent. Excellent.
So, and then I went back to school.
Fabulous. So Mary Martha, you faced a lot of challenges, you know, and it seems like, well, things don't always go to plan. So when you have those situations, how do you regain your confidence when it gets so tough? Because you come across as very confident, and then I've been told people say, well, that's just a facade. So how do you regain your confidence?
Oh, yeah, it's all a facade. You have to fake it till you make it. You can't let the people know how you truly feel on the inside. No, I think for me, in terms of confidence, it's shutting off the noise.
Okay.
So there's, no matter what, we all have that little voice.
Yes, we do.
You know, Molly, that's in your ear talking about, you know, you can't do it.
Yeah.
You know, these people don't like you. All of that. And so you have to learn to make Molly shut up.
Okay.
And then say something positive about yourself.
Right. Right.
You know, you're not smart enough. Shut up, Molly. Yeah. I am smart enough. I am enough. And it's a daily, you know, it's a daily thing.
Yeah.
You know, I stay off of Facebook because you go down the timeline on Facebook and you begin to think that your life is horrible.
Right. Right. Yeah.
But that's not true. That's not the case, because on Facebook, what are people doing? They want to show all the good things that are happening.
Yes.
No one's truly talking about, you know, the ins and out, the day to day kind of things and those bad things that happen. So with confidence, it's knowing that I am enough.
Yes.
I am good enough, and I'm going to work through whatever it is, and I will get to the other side.
Yes, yes.
Some days are good with that. Some days I'm more confident than others.
Right.
But, you know, every day changes. Life is not, it's not the same.
Yeah.
There are some situations that you may be put in, and you're like, I don't belong in this room. I don't think I belong in this room.
Yeah.
And then it's, no, someone invited you to the room, so clearly.
Yes.
Clearly, you do belong in the room.
Yeah,
you have to believe that you belong in the room.
Very much, very much.
Yeah. So that's how I get through that.
And how do you get to that self-belief? Because I know it's something that I suppose we as women struggle with sometimes. You said, do I deserve a seat at the table? And in situations before, especially when it comes to, I suppose, careers sometimes, where people look and say, am I being an imposter? I feel like I'm an imposter sitting here. Because this isn't, you know, how did I get to this position? What, you know, what happened? And I have to tell women sometimes, well, actually, you know, it's not about what you can tell them. Sometimes they employed you because of what they can ask you.
Yep.
Yeah. So do you have imposter times and the imposter syndrome kicks in?
Yes. So when I first started working in higher education, I definitely felt like an imposter. Yeah. I was like, I have a degree in education.
Yeah.
Why am I here? I said, but I can, you know, get some kids together and tell them, you know, don't drink, don't do drugs. I can do that. Then, you know, after I got into it and started learning what the job was, I realized that I had what it took to do it. Yes. But clearly the people that hired me, they knew it.
Yes.
But I felt like an imposter, but I had to take a deep breath and I was like, let's figure out what the job is. Oh yeah, I got it.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times with the imposter kind of syndrome, I think it's when you, the unknown, especially like if you're starting a new job. But then once you get into it, you realize it's fine.
Yes.
You're smart. You're talented.
Yeah.
You know, you can do this.
Right.
Now, if I ended up in a job being, I don't know, a surgeon, maybe I shouldn't be there because I didn't go to school for that. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, something
that's so specialty.
Yeah.
But in terms of like regular everyday life, run of the mill kind of stuff. Yeah. We all experience that imposter kind of thing.
Just
move through it and do whatever it is that you have to do, because oftentimes you don't really have a choice depending on what it is. My latest imposter syndrome is I'm a game designer.
I know. I know. And we're going to come on to that.
Yeah. And that is definitely, I am living in some type of imposter.
But you're an award-winning game designer.
I am a two-time
award-winning game designer. So tell us more how you came into the game, because you're not an imposter, because this is real. So
it's real, right?
It's real.
But there are moments that I'm with other designers and I'm like, what are you doing here?
Yes.
What are you doing here? So about 2 years ago, I and my brother, Billy, had to move our mother from Pittsburgh and into a nursing facility. My mother had been living on her own. She took a fall. The doctor said she could no longer live by herself because whatever this disease condition that she has, it has, you know, really betrayed her body at this point. And so I moved my mom into the nursing home. And I don't know, Janice, if you've ever had to deal with elder care, but it is very stressful.
Right.
It is emotionally draining.
Yes.
And I got depressed.
Okay.
Filled with anxiety. I was yelling at people, snapping at them all of the time. I remember the Sunday afternoon, I had a complete meltdown in the grocery store with my husband over baby carrots. Why are you yelling about baby carrots? And I didn't really realize how this transition for my mother was affecting me, because it wasn't just watching her life change. My life was changing as well. And so I joke and I said, you know, I need to do something as a public service for everyone that has to deal with me. I need to go see a doctor. And, you know, that's something as just human beings first.
Yeah.
It is very difficult to acknowledge and accept when you need help.
Right.
And acknowledge and accept when it's something that's emotional or mental.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I have to be here for my mother. So I need to make sure that I am as healthy as possible. I am a wife. I'm also, you know, I'm working with students. They need me. Yeah. They can't come to me and I not, you know, and I not be well, but I want it to be well for myself.
Right.
And so first I went to the doctor and I said, give me a pill. And then I put myself in therapy. I was like, 'cause I got to talk through some stuff.
Yeah.
And, I said, what are some of the other things that I could do to help myself?
Right.
You know, people say exercise, that gets your endorphins up. Yeah. I'm like, well, I'm going to write.
writing was always good for me. So I started writing. I wasn't really sure what the writing was going to be.
Right.
And then I said, oh, I should create something. I like games. Like, it was just very random. It was very random. I came up with the idea, I should write a game, and I researched it and started writing it 2 years ago, March 8th.
Right.
So I just started writing and figuring out how does one design a game. Okay. I did not know how to use Adobe Illustrator and Photoshop and all of these things, but I knew some other people that did. Okay. I said, help me. I said, help me to figure this out. Lynda.com, YouTube, being on different forums and things like that, that helped me to create what we now call the ultimate clapback.
Right.
So do you know what a clapback is?
It's a retort, isn't it?
It is a retort.
It's a retort. Yeah, so brownie points for me.
So it's a response to something that someone says to you that might be a little shady. So someone may say to you, tattoos are a lifetime of commitment, and you can say, too bad your marriage wasn't.
Yeah. Or, I'm one versed. My husband will tell you I'm well versed in that.
Oh, you are? Well, I find that most Black women are.
Yes.
You know, you have to have quick wit. And that's who I am, truthfully. Excellent. I am someone with very quick wit. Yeah. And so I said, well, since I'm always snapping at people, why don't I make a game about snapping? Excellent. And it became very therapeutic for me. The game is hilarious because it's things that people have said to you, things that maybe you wish that you would have said back to someone else.
Right.
It's taken from social media, my real life, you know, real life instances.
Yeah.
Things that I hear on the train, you know, sometimes people speak very loudly on public transportation.
Right.
So I can hear a lot of what they're saying, and I have a little notepad and I'm writing things down. I'm like, oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Or, oh no, this is good too. And so that's what happened.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah.
And the game. So how do people get hold of the game? Is it we buy it online or?
Yeah, you can buy it. Yeah, you can buy it online directly from me. www.theultimateclapback.com.
Excellent.
And then I ship it myself.
Okay.
So I'm a one woman entity. You know, I go to these places and someone's like, so, you know, are you the lead designer? Lead designer? I'm the only. Who does your marketing? Me. Who does your social media? Me. You know. And so that's where I feel like an imposter because I'm like, I have no idea what I'm doing. But does anyone?
No, it's true. We all have to start. So we all have to start somewhere. You know.
You have to start somewhere. But one of the things that I'm really excited about in starting just with this, but I find this to be true for anything.
Right.
Fail fast.
Yes. 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 Get rebound, bounce back,
get over it and keep going.
Yeah.
Don't let what you may perceive as a failure.
Yeah.
I just would like to call it a roadblock.
Yeah.
But you learn and you keep going.
Yeah.
I think sometimes because people are afraid of failure.
Yes. Yes.
And so you can't let one little thing
deter
you
from
what the bigger picture.
Very much, is. Very much, very much.
And go ahead.
And I had the same conversation quite recently. I did a speech at a talk, and one of the things I quoted was Oprah saying that failure is just a stepping stone into your greatness.
Yep.
You know, and I'm such a big believer that in absolutely everything, even relationships.
Yes.
You know, learn what you don't like, what you didn't like from that failed relationship.
Absolutely.
So you don't repeat it again.
Right. And that's whether it's a romantic relationship or a platonic one.
Yes, definitely.
You know, how do you remove the toxic people out of your life?
Very much.
You know, all of those types of things. So this has been a really great journey, and I'm having a good time with it. I'm now an official selection of the Indie Mega Booth. So what is Indie Mega Booth? Indie Mega Booth is a group of independent game developers.
Right.
It's an application process. And so I applied so that I could showcase my game at a very large gaming expo next month, which is called PAX, which is called the Penny Arcade Expo. And so I am one of 100 games from 21 different countries that will showcase during this event. Thank you. So it's a big deal. And I'm like,
a big deal.
I'm like, wow, what, you know, all right. I was like, okay, girl, how are we getting to Boston? Yeah. How much is going to cost me? But I'm very excited about going, and I'm very fortunate to have friends that are standing with me and by me, and, you know, they come to events when they can. I have two friends that said, well, we're not doing anything, so how about we work this event with you? And I said, really? Awesome. I can't pay you, but I'll, you know, I get you some peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. but, we do it together.
Yeah.
And so it's good. And I feel a lot better managing the depression and anxiety.
Yeah.
It has been difficult and has been challenging, but I'm doing so much better, and the game is helping me. That's the one thing that I can say that gives me so much joy and so much pleasure is watching people play the game and just listening to the laughter. Something about cackling just makes my heart feel warm.
Yes.
It just, you know, it just does. So that's what I've been doing.
And fabulous. That's well done you. And you talked about having the support of your friends.
Yeah.
How important is having the right tribe behind you?
Oh, you need people rooting for you.
Yeah.
But you need people that are truthfully rooting for you.
Yes, yes.
Not the people that are saying that they're rooting for you, but on the back end are plotting and scheming against you.
Yeah.
Or talking negatively behind you. No, you want the people that are really going to be, you know, in your corner, and also to help to keep you, you know, grounded.
Yes.
And also when you feel like you can't go on, you need someone to say, you got it.
Yeah.
You got it. It's okay. You've come this far. You got it. Keep going.
Yeah.
That's very important. And there were some people, not just about this with, you know, with the ultimate clapback, but just in general in my life, I've had to let them go.
Yes.
Love them. I don't want anything terrible to happen to them, but their time, their season was done.
Yes. And people really need to understand that. It's nothing personal. It's just that right now we're at a different stage of where we are in our life or whatever. And that, you know, it's just not gelling anymore. It's nothing personal.
But it's hard. And mourning those types of relationships, that's really hard. Like, I'm a friend, like, through and through. I am there for you. Like, that's just the type of person that I am.
Yeah.
And so when to lose that type of bond that I've had with someone because I've had to make the choice to choose me.
Yes.
That's been difficult. And there were times that I didn't choose me.
Right.
And it took a while for me to get to the point where, no, I will choose me.
Yeah.
Because my cup is now empty.
Right.
Because I've been giving and giving and giving to everyone, but no one is pouring into me.
Yeah. And how important to you, Mary Martha, is self-care now?
Well, considering that I just took, I just took 4 months off from my job.
Wow.
And I'm coming back. This past week has been my first full week.
Okay.
Back. You have to have self-care or you're going to end up burnt out.
Right. Right.
And Mary Martha was burnt out, like completely burnt out, fried.
Right.
And, you know, like I mentioned earlier that I put myself, you know, in therapy when I was given the diagnoses of depression and anxiety. Yes. And I said, I should start talking about some things. And especially with the situation with my mom, one of the things that I realized is that I have been some form of a caregiver.
Right.
For a very long time.
Yes. Yes.
For a very long time. And I'm now tired.
Yeah.
You know, I'm tired, but it's not over.
you know, like, no, I still have to continue to do it. Like, I want to rest.
Yes. But, yes.
You know, my mother is here. And so I, you know, there are things that, you know, that have to be done. I mean, after you and I finish today, I'm going to go and hang out with her, you know, for a little bit. So there are things that have to be done. So I was in the space and was given the opportunity for, you know, where I work, that I could take a medical leave.
Right.
For mental health.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that I was able to do that.
Yeah.
So I took a leave of absence and I was just quiet. Quiet. Like, I went to sleep and it was so good. I had a pedicure and then I was quiet some more.
Right.
And I did the things that I wanted to do. And if I didn't want to do it, I didn't do it.
Yes.
And then I also took the time to figure out, okay, what are some of the things that I have control over?
Yeah.
And then how do I change that? And then the things that I don't have control over, how do I change my response?
Right.
Because there are some things in life that are just not going you know, to change.
Someone
said to me, well, what would help you right now? And I said, for my mother to be well.
Yes.
And to be, you know, and to be
back. But realistically,
But realistically, that's not what it is.
Yeah.
So what are the things that I can do? What are the things that I need? How do I set up those boundaries?
Right.
The self-care is really about setting up those boundaries and remembering that, you know, if you're empty, you can't serve anyone else.
Yes.
And so what are the things that you need to make sure that you stay charged? There was a time where on Sundays, I would get in the bathtub and I'm painting my toes and I'm giving myself facials and all of those things. And I haven't done it in years.
Right.
Like, what, you know, what happened to that?
Yeah.
Why are you not exercising? Why are you putting, you know, bad food inside of you? Because it tastes so good.
Yeah.
Like, do you have Girl Scout cookies?
Not here, but I do not know there. Yeah.
These Girl Scout cookies are so good. But, you know, that's where the self-care comes
right,
in.
Right.
And making sure that you put yourself first and knowing that it's okay to.
Yeah. Yes.
You don't have to feel bad about it.
Yeah. Guilty. Yeah.
You don't need to feel guilty about it.
No.
But I have so much guilt.
No, don't.
I do. There are moments where I have so much guilt. But over these 4 months that I've taken off, my guilt has dwindled.
Right.
My guilt has dwindled. And no is a complete sentence.
And I was going to say, it goes back to my favorite saying that self-care is not selfish. It's self-preservation.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, you know, so, and I am totally with you on the no. I love that. Was it no is a complete sentence?
Yes, ma'am.
I love that. So how do you, a lot of women are not used to saying no.
Yeah.
How did you develop that skill?
Well, I developed that skill, but it actually came from being diagnosed with a brain disorder.
Okay.
So I was diagnosed with a brain disorder called Chiari malformation. And what that is it's a skull-like abnormality where my brain descended out of the skull and into my spinal canal. And I started having muscle fasciculation. So my face would move on its own. I was having fainting spells and terrible headaches, like the worst headache you've ever had, like times 10.
Right.
And fast forward, after that diagnosis, I had to have brain surgery. And it's interesting that I always find, like, when people say, I got sick and then I realized that I have to do something different with my life. It's a shame that sometimes it's those tragic moments that give you a different perspective. But I survived brain surgery. I don't have time to do anything that I don't want to do. I do not have time. Now, there was a part of me that has always been kind of I don't want to say headstrong, because I think sometimes people use that as a negative, you know, in the negative, but yes. I've been pretty sure about what I wanted to do and if I didn't want to do it.
Right.
But maybe how I would say no was different. Okay. Maybe I didn't just say no.
Yeah.
Maybe it was, well, maybe we could, you know.
It was no with an opening.
It was never just the no.
Yeah, yeah.
These days, I just say no.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I'm not interested. I'm not going to do that. And that's okay.
Fabulous.
Yeah. Fabulous. It's a hard thing because in saying no, you have to be prepared for whatever the response or the fallout may be.
Okay.
Depending on, you know, what the situation is.
Yeah.
You know, where I work, I'm quick to tell people no. Most of the time, if it's a directive, I'll do it.
Yes.
But if it's something that I think is not going to serve people, no, Mary, and then I start speaking in third person, no, Mary Martha will not be doing that. Mary, you know, Mary Martha's not doing that. Mary Martha has set up these boundaries. I do not check my email after 5 p.m. I do not check it before 9 a.m. when I am in the office. Right. I do not check it on weekends, and on Fridays I stop checking my email at 12:45.
Right. And nobody, the business hasn't fallen down.
No,
no one's, you know, everything carries on.
Everything carries on. And that's one of the things that we as women truly need to understand.
Yeah.
Especially when, like, working and things like that. If something terrible were to happen to you, heaven forbid.
Yeah.
You know what they're going to do?
Carry on. Move right along.
Carry on.
Yeah.
I told someone that I cannot just, you know, act like, oh, if I'm not here, this job isn't going to work out. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. What are they going to do? What do you mean, what are they going to do?
Yeah.
If I passed away, they would send my mother maybe a lily and then post for my job the next afternoon.
Very true. Very true.
I don't own any of this. Yeah. No one is staying up late for me. Why am I doing that for them?
Yeah, yeah. Because the door closed and it was Mary Martha who.
Right.
So, yeah. So, totally understand.
Wipe that right off.
Yeah.
I mean, I was gone for 4 months. They carried on. They figured out how to do it.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Now, did they do it as well as I did? Probably not.
That's a different conversation. That's a different conversation.
But they made it through. They definitely made it through.
So Mary Martha, looking back now, what advice would you give to your teenage self?
Eat less fried food.
That's it. Done.
That's it.
Okay.
Eat less fried food.
Excellent. And if you could choose your own mentor, who would it be and why?
I've already chosen him.
Okay.
In my real life, my brother is my mentor.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Why? Is this Billy?
Yeah, this is Billy.
Okay.
So Billy is my mentor. Because his life has been such a roadmap for me in understanding, one, how to live your true, authentic self.
Excellent.
How to treat people.
Right.
And how to show up for your life. Excellent. My brother has taught me that. Excellent. How to just show up for your life. Excellent. You have to.
Yes.
We have this one time. And so that he is it for me. I can call him at any time and say, so should I do this? Shouldn't I? I'm worried about this. And we can have the conversation that helps to get me to where it is that I need to be.
Excellent.
You know, I mean, some would say it's just a very close brother-sister relationship, but I would say even though we are close as siblings, there is the way that I look at him in certain situations is one of someone who's wise, who has been there, and who can help to guide me. Yeah. And I'm very fortunate to have him.
Yeah. And you've got next level siblingness.
Yes.
I'm making up a word there.
Yes.
But I understand what you mean.
Yeah, but we're definitely, we have a very, very interesting relationship, and I'm glad that he and I are so close.
Excellent, excellent. So Mary Martha, what are the three things you've learned about yourself during your career?
Which career?
Okay. You choose any, because I know you have multiple careers.
Right. One of the things that I've learned is I am smart.
Yes.
I am not afraid to change my situation.
Yeah.
And what I've also learned about myself is that this job is not my life.
Excellent.
Those are the three things that I've learned. And so because of that, I conduct myself in a different way.
Okay.
One that serves me.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And what would you say your imperfections and how do you embrace them?
Imperfections?
Yeah.
I'm perfect. Let's see. I am definitely hard on myself. I think sometimes who isn't?
Yeah.
Part of that people would say because my sign is a Virgo, and Virgos tend to be very critical of themselves and others.
Okay.
So I would say that is a definite imperfection. And did you ask me how do I embrace it?
Yes.
Learning when I truly am being hard on myself or when I'm just, you know, observing something that has happened.
Okay.
And that's taken time. And then when, once again, that voice comes where yes. I'm being like overly critical of myself, I just step back, you know, shut up, Molly. It's all right. I'm okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, lately I have less of those moments.
Right.
You know, this isn't something that I just wake up and I'm like, you're going to stop being hard on yourself. Like, that's not how it works. It's always evolving, because there are so many different sections of our lives where that can creep up, whether it's at work, at home, physical, being, you know, a spouse, a partner to someone, you know, you have that. So that's how I embrace it. That, you know, it's like, that's who I am.
Yeah.
Let's do better.
Yeah.
Procrastination.
Procrastination is another one?
Procrastination is another.
Okay, sorry, before I move on, tell me about your procrastination.
I just, you know, so there are some times that I think that there's more time to do stuff. I'm like, oh, there's more time. Yeah. You know, I keep a better calendar. There are systems and things out there. But you know, I know that there are some things that I procrastinate about. And I realize a lot of my procrastination is not out of laziness or not wanting to do it. Some of the procrastination, depending on what I'm doing, is just out of fear.
Right. Okay. Okay. Yeah. So tell me about what are you fearful of?
Rejection.
Okay.
Like, so sending an email is very quick and simple. Like,
yes.
When I think about when I have my to-do list, what are the things that can be done in like 5 minutes? Let's get those things off the list. And I could get most of those things done in terms of like emails, but then there might be one email. It's like, oh, I have to ask someone for something.
Yes.
I don't think the response is going to be good. They don't like me. What do you mean they don't like you? Like, how did you get to they don't like you?
That's
no
right.
one has ever said they don't like you. I'm being a pest. How? You haven't even sent the email.
Yeah.
So then that's you know, an example of procrastination and the fear.
Yeah. And it's going through that process of like, again, it's the belief. You're giving yourself these limiting beliefs.
Yeah.
And then you're already given the answers when you haven't even asked the question.
Right.
You know, so get over yourself.
From 0 to 100.
Yeah.
From zero to 100.
Get over yourself.
Yeah. Easier said than done. But you know, it's all a process.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. And Mary Martha, I'm loving this conversation with you this afternoon.
Likewise.
What's your definition of success?
Success.
Yeah.
I would say success is setting goals and working towards them and not stopping when life gets in the way.
Right.
That is success.
Right.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, I deem you very successful.
Thank you.
I deem you very successful.
It's hard. Yeah. You know, it doesn't happen, you know, overnight.
Yeah.
And everyone's road to success for them, whatever that means to them.
Yeah.
It's their own personal journey. Yeah. But I learned very on, success is not about wealth.
No.
Success is not, now money is good sometimes. Like it can help in some situations. But you'll figure it out.
And this is not a question you would have seen on my list, Mary Martha, but I'm going to ask you anyway. You have such a great outlook on life with all the adversity that you've faced and the hurdles and things like that and the challenges. How do you keep yourself in such a positive, what I perceive, before I say anything, what I perceive to be such a positive mindset?
Well, you have to show up for your life. I have no other option but to show up for my life.
Right.
Do I still continue to have challenges? Yes. Like everything is not rosy.
Yes.
All of the time. But I believe what you put out in the universe, you will receive back. I believe that words have power. If I get up and say, oh, this is going to be a terrible day, then that's exactly what it will be.
Yeah.
So you have to change your mindset. You have to change what you say.
Yeah.
You also have to guard what you see.
Right.
What you hear, what you allow to enter your personal space.
Right.
And that's what I do. I have to do that. That's part of setting the boundaries. That's part of getting rid of the toxic people. That's part of making sure that I take care of myself, my self-preservation, right? It's making sure that I do all of those things. Okay. And, 95% of the time, I am positive.
Excellent.
But there are some days, depending on what it is, I may not be as positive on that particular day. But hopefully, if given the opportunity the next day, I'm going to make that one be positive.
Fantastic. So my last question, and this is a question I love to ask everybody, my last question.
Yeah.
Mary Martha, what does it mean to you to be your own hero?
I feel like I'm going to say the same thing over again. to be my own hero.
Yeah.
It just goes back to being an active participant.
Right.
And whatever it is that I want, moving through life, this is active. It's not passive.
Yes.
It's not passive. So, I guess I'll go back to showing up for your life. You got to do it.
Fantastic. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, there's nothing wrong with it. It's good to show up. Because no one else is going to live your life for you.
Excellent. So as I said, that was my last question, Mary Martha. Yeah. Thank you so much. This has been a fantastic conversation.
Thank you for having me. I'm so glad that we got to do this.
Definitely. So if anybody wants to get in touch with you, we know the Ultimate Clapback again. They can get hold of the game. It's
www.theultimateclapback.com. You can also follow me on social media. So that's Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and that would be @clapbackgame.
Fantastic. So thank you again, Mary Martha, for your participation this afternoon. I have absolutely loved it. And I hope the listeners have as well. Thank you so much. So what a fabulous conversation that was. And would you believe that's the first time Mary Martha and I had actually met and had a discussion? It was like talking to an old friend. She had some fantastic sound bites there. My favorite was definitely "no is a complete sentence." And the fact that she's managed to be comfortable saying no is fabulous. So definitely a skill that we as women need to perfect.
and skill so that we can move forward a lot more positively in life. I love the fact that she's maintained such a positive outlook with all the adversity she's faced, from the brain disorder to her mother's illness to her father's death. So she's definitely a positive person. And most definitely when I'm in New York, I will look at Mary Martha.
So I hope you enjoyed this week's edition of Phenomenal Woman. And as ever, it's my pleasure to show up here every week and connect with like-minded women who want to live their life to its fullest and be empowered to take their career to the next level. I hope you enjoyed this edition of Phenomenal Woman, and I know you've definitely loved it. So please, please, please share this on all your social media networks, Facebook, Instagram, and let all the other phenomenal women that you know share in what you're hearing. You can connect with me and join the conversation via JaniSutherland.com. And on Facebook and Instagram, I am down as I Am Jani Sutherland, and links are in the show notes. So remember, you are the author of your own story. You control the narrative, and you have the power to give your life story a happy ending. So own it. Until next time, I look forward to connecting with you.